This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
After the Holocaust, my father used to say, never again, it will never ever happen again. Yet it happened again, here.
That's Uwizai Imarini, a Rwandan secondary school student, on the challenges of ensuring genocide doesn't repeat itself. Details coming up also. The intensified conflict going on right now in Libya puts in doubt a UN-supported effort to hold elections. And Ugandan police deny ransom was paid in the rescue of an American tourist and her driver abducted 5 days ago in a Ugandan national park. We have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, a warplane has attacked Tripoli's only working airport today as the United Nations calls for a humanitarian truce in Libya. A person at the Mittaga airport reported the attack, but no side in Libya's conflict has claimed responsibility. The airport was then shut down. The Libyan National Army, LNA, led by Khalifa Haftar, has been fighting the internationally recognized government in Tripoli. The LNA supports the Eastern Administration in Benghazi. Reports say forces loyal to Haftar are nearing the capital. The LNA says 19 of its soldiers have died in the fighting. The UN has called for a truce to permit emergency services for the injured and for civilians to get out of the conflict area. The health ministry of the Tripoli government says at least 25 people have been killed in fighting south of the city, including soldiers and civilians. About 80 people have been reported wounded. The government of Prime Minister Faiz Al-Sarraj is opposing the offensive by the LNA. Allies have rushed to the capital from the nearby port of Misrata to support the Prime Minister's government. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has called for an immediate halt to the offensive of Haftar's forces. The U.S. military also has withdrawn a small number of its troops from the country. The intensified conflict puts in doubt a UN-supported effort to hold elections. Libya has been divided between a UN-recognized government in Tripoli and an administration in eastern part of the country. The country plunged into civil war after the overthrow of ruler Muammar Gaddafi in 2011. Haftar is a former general of Gaddafi who turned against the former leader. Even as Rwanda marks the 25th anniversary of the genocide perpetrated against the Tutsi, the government is urging scholars, politicians, and the international community to look back at the causes and take action to stamp out ideologies that could lead to a repeat. The country is now in a 100-day mourning period, the same time period that 800,000 people were slaughtered. Eugene Wimana has more details from the Kigali conference on the issue.
Involvement in the genocide went to the top. The National Commission for the Fight Against Genocide says that among the 22 cabinet ministers of the 1994 government, 10 were tried for genocide crimes and 9 were found guilty. Among the 11 provincial heads, 10 were convicted. The executive secretary of the commission, Jean-Damascene Bizimana, says politicians and scholars have to teach Rwandans the history of the genocide and let them rectify what went wrong. Those figures show that several intellectuals from different domains we even present here played a very essential role in the genocide. Adding that now they should play another essential role, reflecting on the genocide and seek effective mechanisms for its real prevention, he suggests. In a way, keeping its memory and work hard solidarity to forming a pacifist post-genocide population. Several academics took the first lead in sowing the right seed. Kari Wickens works for a non-profit educational and professional development organization. he was the only American who chose to stay in Kigali throughout the genocide. He says he frequently brings his students to Rwanda to learn what happened to ensure that not only Rwandans, but the rest of the world never again turn talk into deadly action.
So I get to bring students and teachers pretty much every summer to see this gorgeous country, but then to go deeper beneath the beauty and see the real strengths in Rwanda.
By those who are striving to turn a dark past into a bright future, doubt the contribution of the international community. In 1945, after the Holocaust of Jews, delegates of 50 countries who set the foundation for the United Nations resolved that no human being who shall be the victim of a genocide or other genocidal crimes again. Tali Netz is a Holocaust survivor. She's director of the Johannesburg Holocaust and Genocide Center. She says, never again doesn't have to be just a slogan.
After the Holocaust, my father used to say, never again, it will never ever happen again. Yet it happened again, here, just where we are. So it is so important not to just say empty words, but to take action, to learn, to remember, and to learn lessons for humanity for the future.
Rwandans born after the genocide say the more they know about the genocide, the better they can teach the young ones how to prevent a recurrence. Wize Emeline was born in 2000 and is in her final year of secondary school. She says they have got the chance not only to attend schools, but also to be taught about the history of genocide. They explain it to their little brothers and sisters so as to prevent that it happens again. For the government, the issue isn't how cruel the genocide was, but how to protect youths who make up 60% of the 12 million Rwandans from falling into the pit of prejudice and hatred again. In addition to the deaths, the government says 64% of all Tutsi women were raped and thousands of children were born from that weapon of war. Ejen Wimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Sudanese soldiers intervened to protect demonstrators today after security forces tried to break up a protest by thousands of anti-government demonstrators campaigning outside the defense ministry in central Khartoum. According to witnesses, riot police and secret service personnel charged at the demonstrators with pickup trucks while firing tear gas, trying to disperse a crowd estimated at around 3,000 men and women. But witnesses and activists said soldiers guarding the defense ministry compound came out to protect the demonstrators, firing warning shots in the air. The security forces retreated without firing back. Previous attempts by security forces have failed to disperse the protesters, who have vowed to stay until President Omar al-Bashir steps down. Protests against Bashir have been staged regularly since December, when the government tried to triple bread prices. The Interior Minister says 6 people were killed Saturday in Khartoum and 1 in Darfur. Bashir, a former army general who came to power in a military coup in 1989, has acknowledged that the protesters have legitimate demands, but says they must be addressed peacefully and through the ballot box. Leaders of the Catholic, Anglican, and Scottish Presbyterian churches are in Rome preparing for 2 days of spiritual reflections for leaders of South Sudan. Pope Francis and the head of the Anglican Communion, Justin Welby, will lead prayer sessions for South Sudanese leaders on Wednesday and Thursday. As reporter Sabina Castelfranco in Rome tells VOA's Joan Tanza, the Scottish Presbyterian moderator is also taking part in the spiritual retreat aimed at preparing South Sudanese leaders for the formation of a transitional government of national unity in Juba in May.
They're going to be holding a spiritual retreat for the leaders of South Sudan for 2 days at the Vatican. Now, this is going to be a meeting at which Pope Francis is going to take part on the second day. It will be attended also by members of other churches, including the Archbishop of Canterbury, and there will be a prayer session for South Sudan. Now, South Sudan is one of the world's youngest countries, and for Pope Francis, he has always been very concerned about what has been going on there, particularly recently, in recent years, with, you know, more than 400,000 people having been killed and more than 4 million who have had to flee from their homes. So he is seeking to give a new impetus and new support to both the president and the rebel leader and former vice president of South Sudan, so that they can kickstart these plans for a transitional government, possibly from next month.
Beside Pope Francis and the head of the Anglican Church, are there any other church leaders there present at that retreat?
There will be other church leaders present at the retreat. And the main point is for also Catholic members of the church to discuss together something that the Pope has always said he is willing to do, and that is for the Catholic Church to contribute to help rebuild an education system in South Sudan that is dilapidated, and also a health sector that requires significant help, and of course provide support in the reconstruction efforts that will be needed in South Sudan. But obviously the first person that church leaders want to see is peace in the country. And so this is the whole idea of the spiritual retreat, so that they can come together and discuss how best to move forward so that the peace remain stable and that they can bring some stability to the country.
Sabina, you've been covering a lot of activities in Rome and specifically watching the Vatican carefully. Has there ever been any retreat of this sort for other world leaders?
Well, this is quite an important one, and it shows that Pope Francis is certainly very concerned about what is going on in South Sudan. It was just recent that he, last month in fact, received the president of South Sudan, Salva Kiir. I mean, in the past, the Pope has, for other countries, also held spiritual retreat. But certainly this is a very significant one that he is doing. It shows that he is particularly concerned with South Sudan and really wants to put an end to what has been happening there in recent years. As we all know, the peace deal was signed in Addis Ababa last September. This is a process that the Pope wants to make sure now will bring an end to the insecurity that has been experienced by the population in South Sudan long now.
Beside President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar, do you know of any other South Sudanese leaders who are present at this retreat?
I'm not sure about the other Sudanese leaders, but certainly there will be other vast officials that are taking part. Certainly the Secretary of State, Pietro Parolin, will be welcoming them. And there will be other members of the Catholic Church that the South Sudanese leaders will be meeting with.
That's reporter Sabina Castelfranco in Rome speaking with John Tanza earlier today. You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Nineteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The intensified conflict going on right now in Libya puts in doubt a UN-supported effort to hold elections. Rwanda is now in a 100-day mourning period, the same time period that 800,000 people were slaughtered. And leaders of the Catholic, Anglican, and Scottish Presbyterian churches are in Rome, preparing for 2 days of spiritual reflections for leaders of South Sudan. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Ugandan police deny a ransom was paid in the rescue of American tourist Kimberly Sue Ancott and her driver, Jean-Paul. They were rescued in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo yesterday, 5 days after their abduction in a Ugandan national park. Halima Tumani has the latest from Kampala.
American tourist Kimberly Sue Ancott and her Ugandan driver Jean-Paul were abducted last Tuesday afternoon in Queen Elizabeth National Park, which borders Congo. Ugandan police spokesman Fred Enanga says Ancott and Paul were recovered Sunday, but gave little detail about how the rescue was accomplished.
This was a high-risk operation, and we had identified the hideout. The pressure was there of a last resort move-in that there was an implicit threat of the use of force by our allied teams that we had on the ground. But as the police and the government of Uganda, we don't do ransom.
He says neither captive was harmed, and Ancott was handed over to the U.S. ambassador to Uganda on Monday afternoon. Enanga says the operation to arrest the kidnappers is still ongoing with support from the Congolese security. He used this opportunity to warn future kidnappers.
The successful recovery of the captives serves as a reminder to those enemies who want to harm our own people, including visitors, that we will do everything possible within our means to defend them.
This was the first kidnapping of any foreign tourists in Uganda in 20 years. In 1999, armed Hutu fighters from Congo entered Windy Park and killed 8 tourists and 4 Ugandans. After a brief meeting with security officials Monday morning, Uganda President Yoweri Museveni tweeted saying they will deal with these isolated pockets of criminals. He reassured the country and tourists that Uganda is safe, urging them to come and enjoy the Pearl of Africa. He also promised that security will be improved in the parks. On Monday, President Donald Trump tweeted about the abduction. He said Uganda must find the kidnappers of the American tourist and guide before people will feel safe in going there. Bring them to justice openly and quickly. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
Cameroon says at least 40,000 Nigerians who fled across the border for fear of election-related violence have returned home, and another 20,000 are soon to follow. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Makari on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria.
Cameroon troops whistle to indicate it is time for departure as about 3,000 Nigerians prepare to return to the village of Kukawa in Borno State. Mijiyawa Bakari, the governor of Cameroon's far north region, says about 60,000 Nigerians fled into Cameroon ahead of Nigeria's February elections, fearing that violence could break out. He says some 40,000 of them have already returned home and the rest will soon follow.
Avec les élections présidentielle, sénatoriale, qui ont eu lieu au Nigeria.
Bakari says within a week, they counted more than 40,000 Nigerians. They deployed the military to protect them, he says, and provided them with water and food while they stayed in Cameroon. The elections ended well, so the Nigerians are going back to their country, says Bakari. But he notes they will be escorted by Cameroon's military to protect them from any surprise attacks by Boko Haram militants. Government spokeswoman Apollonia Nzukong says after escorting the returnees to the border, Cameroon's military will hand them over to Nigerian authorities.
We are working with the Nigerian authorities, actually, because they have a squad that protects. So they want us to report on any events that are taking place so that they make sure that they provide the necessary protection and the security services that are necessary.
UNHCR has previously criticized Cameroon for refusing to accept Nigerian refugees in breach of its international obligations. But Cameroon says all Nigerians returning home are doing so of their free will. Bakari says Cameroon neither considered nor treated the recent arrivals as refugees because officials often see mass movements across the border before elections. Nigerians in Makari who fled for fear of political violence say they thank God the re-election of President Muhammadu Buhari on February 23 was largely peaceful. 35-year-old Maiduguri businessman Nelson Chidi says he hopes this time around Buhari will ensure peace in Nigeria.
Since Buhari entered there, it has become worse. You can see Boko Haram. People are dying, innocent people are dying for the crime they have never committed. People are not living well. You see Nigerians, they are not having light. While our neighboring countries have light, we produce fuel. But in our country, Nigeria, fuel is too scarce. Our population are suffering. It's because of bad government.
No doubt Cameroon hopes for peace as well, in hopes the flow of refugees will slow down. According to the latest UN figures, the country currently hosts more than 400,000 refugees, mostly from Nigeria and the Central African Republic. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Makari, Northern Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer Bill Workinger and our engineer Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, how has the foreign policy of the United States shaped its relationship with African countries? Former U.S. ambassadors reflect on the opportunities and challenges that Africa poses for the U.S. On the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hey. Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
We've been privileged.